John Basso. This is the John Basso Show, Hotel Mars episode, and my colleague and co-host, David Livingston of The Space Show. And we're headed into the constellation Eridanus. This is a star about a billion years old, Epsilon Eridani. A billion years old, and yet it contains what could be a vision of where we've come from, back to the future, Epsilon Eridani. It's long been known historically, it's very well cited because it's close at hand, it's not far away. The question is, what can we learn from it? And we're very pleased this evening on Hotel Mars to welcome Dr. Kate Sue, an associate astronomer at the Stewart Observatory at the University of Arizona. And she tells me quite straightforwardly that she studies dust. That's a clue as to where we're going. Dr. Sue, Kate, a very good evening to you. What is the significance of a system, Epsilon Eridani, that after all has been visible to astronomers dating back several hundred, if not several thousand years, to the Chinese observatories? What do you see there that can teach us? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Thanks for having me. We are all in just in planetary system, like our own solar system, and there are many different components that make up a planetary system. In addition to star and planet that we normally call a planetary system, there are also many smaller bodies that did not incorporate into making the planet. We call them planetesimals for general planetary system. In our solar system, we also call those smaller body asteroids Kuiper Belt-like objects or comets. And these small bodies can be perturbed by large bodies like planets or distant stars, resulting collision among them that populate dust debris in a planetary system. And astronomers call this a debris disk or a debris belt. So Epsilon Eridani is special because it's very close. It's just located roughly 11 light years away. It is the closest planetary system that hosts a prominent, very bright debris disk. And this star is very similar, have a very similar mass like our sun, but much younger, like you say, roughly a billion years old. So we often consider it to be the Rosetta Stone for sun-like planetary system to help us better understand the early evolution of our own solar system. Therefore, in my view, Epsilon Eridani is very important. Its use and proximity make it a very good target, a prime target to research how planet forms and their subsequent evolution around stars like our sun.
You're looking at the debris disk specially. The debris disk would be a billion years old as well. Is that debris disk visible to you directly from the Stewart Observatory?
Not by my naked eyes. Mm. So what I'm observing is using infrared wavelengths. Mm. Not even within the optical wavelengths where the human eye can see. It was just too thin. You can't see it directly. You have to use a special large telescope to do it.
David?
Kate, nice to talk to you. I read that your best observations and clearest pictures came by using the high atmospheric stratospheric telescope in the Boeing 747 Sophia plane. So that's infrared, and why is that telescope giving you the clearest views?
In general, the debris is they are dust particles. The reason we can see them rather than, you know, the asteroid or the planet compared to other systems is that they cover a large surface area. So they can scatter the starlight much easier than the planet or the asteroid. And so they can generally be detected by two techniques. One is seeing them through scatter starlight. And so the Hubble Space Telescope is really good at detecting that. Another is that this dust particle, they can also observe the heat from the star and re-emit that energy to the infrared wavelengths. And SOFIA is really unique in that way, that because they can operate in the infrared wavelengths, that we can actually see the debris grow in the infrared. That's the unique about the SOFIA observation.
Let's go to that debris disk. This is a billion years old star. So are there still moments that this debris disk is contributing to the formation of planetesimals or asteroids? And is the creation process still going on in Epsilon Eridani?
It could be, because it is quite young in that way. So it could be still forming planet. What we're seeing is just the process, the debris they are forming. So it's possible.
And in addition, there is at least one planet in Epsilon Eridani. So this debris cloud exists alongside asteroids, comets, planetesimals, and planets. Is this what we look like if you were 10 light years away? How is this different from our what you would observe of our system? We're 4.5 billion years old.
Right. So because we are much older. So that means the material left in this current solar system is very loose. The activity is died down as time. If we put our solar system at 11 light years ago, which with current instrument sensitivity, we won't be able to detect solar systems. You know, we can only detect them when they are younger. There's a lot of dust, a lot of process still going on.
I see. So, in fact, we would not be visible from 11 light years, unless, of course, you used the transit method and caught the planets going in front of the sun. That's the way they would see us.
That's the way they see the planet, yes.
But you're able to ascertain the dust cloud itself directly using, of course, what you said, the infrared, and studying it from a great distance. Can you also see the planet that is around Epsilon Eridani?
Now with the observation I was using, we can see the influence of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you have a planet in the system, that should create a certain gap. Separating, that's basically how we find out the Epsilon Eridani is similar to our own. We see a large gap that is between the warmer debris, that debris inside, and the colder debris outside. And that's basically suggesting they have to have some planet mass object in between them, just like Neptune is maintaining the inner edge of our Kuiper Belt zone, you know, preventing any dust leaking inward. So we don't see the planet directly, not my observation, but we can use the debris structure to infer the presence of the planet.
David?
I understand you have two models, one about the warm debris and the other one about what's between the cold part and the star. Can you better explain what these models are and what their significance is?
Yeah, sure. So Epsilon Eridani, so this is a long history. I think the first infrared, this Epsilon Eridani was first to know had dust around it, discovered by NASA's infrared satellite called IRIS in the mid-80s, you know, more than 30 years ago. So using those data, we know Epsilon Eridani had a dust debris belt. And those belts is cold because they emit it at a longer wavelength. It's similar to our Kuiper belt. In addition, this cold debris belt, using the data obtained by another infrared space telescope called SPICER, launched in 2003, Epsilon Eridani is found to be surrounding some warmer debris dust too. Okay. However, limited by this smaller aperture of SPICER, there are two competing models trying to explain the nature of the warm debris, as you suggested. So one model suggests that the warm debris is in the form of two narrow belts, with the inner one similar to the location of our old astro belt. And the other model suggests that the warm material is actually originates from the outer Kuiper Belt-like zone, like a screen of dust filling in the empty space between the cold belt and the star. And these two models suggest totally different underlying planet configuration. You know, the first one is similar to our own system, where one or more planet is needed to separating the warm and cold material. And the other competing model has no such a requirement. No planet is needed. So that's really a dilemma we're facing when this spacer discovered this warm material. So we were able to use the non-falsifying observatory, like you say, called SOFIA. We obtained a clear image of the inner debris and confirmed that the debris distribution is really more similar to the first model suggested. That is, there is indeed a large gap between the cold and warm material.
We're speaking to Associate Astronomer Dr. Kate Sue at the Stewart Observatory at the University of Arizona. We're speaking of the hypotheses and the observations of Epsilon Eridani, which is close at hand if you're an astronomer. And when we come back, let's take off in Sophia with Dr. Kate Sue. What is it like inside? What's the excitement of observing a debris cloud? And then we'll compare and contrast that debris cloud to what we are and what we can learn from this. I'm John Batchelor with Dr. Livingston, Dr. Space himself of The Space Show. I'm John Batchelor. This is The John Batchelor Show. I'm John Batchelor. This is The John Batchelor Show. Dr. Kate Sue, an associate astronomer at the Stewart Observatory at the University of Arizona, is helping us understand the discovery and the speculation around Epsilon Eridani, a near-at-hand star system. I believe it's a main-sequence star, but it's a little smaller than our star. It's a little cooler. It has a debris cloud, actually, two debris clouds, and by inference, a planet around it. This is all observed, however, more excitedly than any other observation. This isn't someone freezing on the top of a mountain looking into a telescope late at night, looking for a cup of coffee. This is a 747 that sounds really cool. Kate, you've taken off in this 747. What's it like inside? Is there a service? Do you get served meals?
No. In fact, the most common question I've been asked by my friend is that do they serve peanuts on the flight? No, there's no food. We got time on the SOFIA telescope to observe Epsilon Eridani. As a result, we can also apply to be on board the aircraft during the flight when the observation is obtained. So my colleague and I were participating in the flight when part of the Epsilon Eridani observation were taken. So from outside, the SOFIA aircraft just looked like a normal 747 commercial aircraft, like we say. But it's totally different inside. There are only a few first-class seats in the front of the cabin. The rest of the cabin is like a big cargo hold where many computers and equipment are located, just like a normal control room of an observatory, except that everybody needs to wear headphones with a mic to communicate during the flight. Because the backside of the airplane where the telescope is located is open to the air, so it was very cold inside the cabin, not like a commercial airplane at all. But it was a great experience for me to be able to fly SOFIA.
The back of the airplane is empty? You can see out?
We can. So it was sealed from the middle cabin where we're located. If you look at go to find a picture of SOFIA during observation, the side of the airplane can open up where the telescope can look at the sky.
Wow.
And, yeah, so it was really cool.
David?
So just to be clear, you're not back in the depressurized area with the telescope. You're in a separate part of it, and only the equipment and the telescope are back there with the side of the plane open, right?
Yeah. So only the telescope is with that cabin that the door is open, and the personnel and the computer equipment is in the middle of the cargo hold.
But very cold. Very cold.
Well, because the backside is open, so there's no point heating the...
Well, it's just like the old days with astronomers, David, on the top of the mountain, except for they're flying around. They're cold all the time.
Right.
They value hot coffee and good socks. That's what to be an astronomer. All right.
How long is your SOFIA flight last?
So a typical flight is about 10 hours. So that's limited by the fuel and, you know, the pilot, the crew, working hours. Our story website on the U of A front page, we actually have a flight plan. So all the SOFIA flights have a specific plan how they fly around and for different type of observation. for the flight I was participating, the total flight is 10 hours, but for SNR Arirang, we only have like 3 hours time observing the star.
Kate, we have a fun time signing you as much money as you want in your budget for the next wave of your research. So what do you want done about Epsilon Eridani? Are there telescopes you want to be on? Are there research projects that, and it doesn't matter how much it costs. What do you want?
Doesn't matter how much it costs?
No, it
okay.
doesn't.
Well, the obvious thing I can see for now, we know is going to come up, is that because SOFIA doesn't really resolve, there's still the same dilemma that we're facing before. The inner debris can also be like a too narrow bell with one that's just like an astral bell or a broad region, a level pentasm bell. SOFIA doesn't have enough resolution to differentiate.
So it could be a broad asteroid belt or a narrow one. You can't tell the difference. Is that
or
it?
Or too narrow one.
Right,
yeah,
right.
We cannot differentiate. But the soon-to-be-launched 6.5-meter James Webb Space Telescope, that's the one that is already in the horizon,
right.
has a very sharp infrared vision that can pin down the exact location of the bell, whether it's a broad region or a too narrow bell, and resolve the detailed structure for the inner debris zone. So that would be the one for the future. And in addition, ALMA, the Atacama Large Millimeter Submeter Array, also have the capability of obtaining very sharp images. And I actively pursuing observation obtained by this two facility and really look forward to the future data obtained by them.
So you want time in the James Webb and you want time at Atacama. James Webb, that would be very expensive time, right, Kate? Very expensive, yes.
Yes, yes. And,
okay.
And that is for the next 5 years,
yeah.
5 years, 10 years. And if I have unlimited funds,
right.
In like maybe 20 years from now, I would like to have a bigger telescope than James Webb that put into the space and operating even further far infrared to obtaining an even sharper picture of debris cloud.
Wonderful.
Around nearby stars.
Wonderful. You shall have it. David?
If you had a big telescope that was optical and not infrared, would that work also, or do you need it to be infrared?
The optical is it works, but you know the star is really really bright. So in order to see this faint dust emission, it's very challenging. They are an instrument building for the future 30-meter ground-based telescope, and that can suppress the light from the star. For those, they will be helpful. I mean, infrared observation is much more easier because the star is very very faint at that wavelength.
Back to theory. I read from your explanation to us, anticipating this conversation, that one of the things you can settle or might be able to settle with your studies is, do planetary systems form in the same fashion no matter what the star is? Does Epsilon Eridani point us in that direction? Does it say Epsilon Eridani and our solar system have the same formation history?
Yeah, I certainly think so. You know, our solar system is about 4.5 billion years old, so many of the traces for the process that create today's solar system are gone. So studying other planetary systems around stars at different ages, you know, from young to old, is like taking snapshot photos through time. And this snapshot can help us better understand the formation and evolution process that our solar system have been through, and providing a better insight into the nature of the planetary system in general. Specifically, we know, like you say, the Epsilon Eridani is very similar to our own solar system in terms of the planetary architecture. And this suggests that there must be some common pathway to form a planetary system. Given the diversity that in the thousands of exoplanet systems discovered today, it is really interesting to know that our solar system is not unique in that sense. So,
Dr. Kate Hsu is an associate astronomer at the Stewart Observatory at the University of Arizona. When she's not flying around in a really cool 747 that's very cold called SOFIA, Dr. Livingston, David Livingston, is the host of The Space Show. I want to thank you, Kate, very much for this frontier of big astronomy, an unlimited budget, and the James Webb Space Telescope. Once we get it launched and We all pray for that. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show.